The Daily Mirror calls on you.
Football is about nothing unless it's about something, and what it is about.
I am going to get 100% out of you.
Welcome back to another Mirror Football podcast. My name is Steve Anglesey. What a show today. We've got an England international footballer, we've got top 10 hit maker. But first, he's Fred Astaire with long blonde hair. Come in, Robbie Savage.
Morning, Stephen.
How are we? First of all, how is your nose, which I believe has been damaged?
Yeah, it's alright, to be fair. Maybe cracked a little bit and bruised, but it's alright, mate. To be fair, what people were saying was on Saturday night when I hit it in the camera, I could have been in the match of the day, students, that big me nose.
And it was, it's a battle of a 30 grand camera, and that Schnecker is...
It could have been a lot worse.
I could have banged
me 20 grand teeth.
Right, let's start with the big sort of anniversary of the week, which is it's coming up now for 25 years of Alex Ferguson at Man United. Yeah. You were there working with him for a very brief spell. Eric Harrison, who we talked to on the podcast last week, was obviously the sort of main man for the youth. What kind of did Fergie was Fergie involved at all? Would he just come and give you the hairdryer for a laugh?
He'd watch. You know, you'd see him there, especially at the Cliff when, you know, the youth team would play or the A and B team as it was then. You know, he'd watch everything, to be fair, mate. Nothing would pass him by, and he had involvement. But Eric was our main guy. But Fergie, he's the best he's ever been in my eyes, no question. But, you know, I was just disappointed the way, they let me go, because they let me go. It was the right decision, because I wasn't good enough. But, you know, just the thing when I asked for David Beckham's shirt and he opened the door and said no, and I thought that was a bit harsh, mate, if I'm being fair. So really, you know, yes, the man is a fantastic manager, the best ever been, but, you know, would I go for a drink with him? No. But he wouldn't go for a drink with me, really, but just saying that I just thought that was a bit harsh, do you know what I mean, to be fair, mate.
Yeah. I mean, were you in awe of him when you were a kid? Were you scared of him?
Yes, of course. He's Sir Alex Ferguson. He wasn't Sir Alex Ferguson then, but... you know, of course, he was the manager of Manchester United for a while, and any manager, you know, you don't know, you're a bit scared of, because in that respect. But, you know, unfortunately for me, I never played under him, and it was the right decision. And he's gone on to be, in my opinion, the best there's ever been, no question. But, you know, I thought that, you know, to decline somebody of a shirt and just say no, you know, it wasn't any old Tom, Dick and that, it was somebody who he'd, you know, his group and his youth team. I just thought that was a bit harsh. So
yeah,
I wasn't really, you know, off the field. And, you know, if I'd seen him out, you know, I'd have no time for him, really. You know, a great guy, great manager. No, I'm a great manager, no question, the best I've ever been. But, you know, just for that incident, then, you know, I think you should treat people how you find off the field. And the way, you know, the way he said no, I was, you know, it was embarrassing, really. Embarrassing for me.
I went red. Yeah, and now you're obviously brown, so
No, orange.
Orange, yes, that's right. Yeah. You're going through the traffic lights, basically, aren't you?
I just thought that, you know, he's got kids, he's got grandkids, and just thought that, you know, that would have been lovely for my boy to have. Do you know what I mean? I just thought it was a bit out of order, really.
Why did he do it?
No.
I mean, is
don't
it?
No, no. I just said no. Shut the door. And I just felt myself going red, but. That's just me, Bird, isn't it? You know, I'm a big boy, and it's only your shirt at the end of the day, but just thought maybe be a bit more gracious. Yeah, of course you can, you know. So yeah. Anyway, that's why, you know, off the field, I wouldn't go to any great lengths of saying hi to the guy, but on the field and what he does as a manager, he's a fantastic, the best ever.
Because he'll be remembered as the best manager ever, but also, I mean, people remember... You know, Bill Shankly, Brian Clough, Bob Paisley. People remember guys like that with real affection, don't they? But with Fergie, there'll always be people will say, "Well, he's got all those medals, but." And it is just things like that, isn't it? Is that part of what makes him such a great competitor, though?
Yeah, I think so. You know, I lived next door to him and didn't see him once in 6 months. You know, probably because he was out so early to work and back so late. and that's why he's probably achieved what he's achieved. You know, never seen him. He'd gone before I went to work and wasn't back when I got back. So it just proves, you know, that even at his age, he probably works still as hard or even harder than he did when he started in the game. So, you know, man's a legend. You know, legend as simple as that. But, you know, legend, end of story.
Yeah, I mean, who's been his best ever signing, do you think?
You got to say Cantona. I think Cantona. He's made loads and loads of good ones. To be fair, though, he's made some bad ones, mate. Let's not cross over. He's made some bad ones. You know, he's made a few errors. Let's be honest, he's only human. He's made a few errors in the transfer market, but majority have been wonderful. Look at Steve Bruce. Look at Eric Cantona. You know, look at Cristiano Ronaldo, you know, struggled at first when, you know, the most expensive player in the world. You look at, you know, what made some wonderful, wonderful signings. But let's be fair, he's made a few clangers at all.
Yes, he has. When you got shipped out of United, did he tell you face to face, or was it
face to face? Yeah, just I wasn't good enough, and I accepted it. You know, I was heartbroken, but you know, you're not going to question. A bit less Strictly Come Dancing, really. Craig Revel always.
Yeah,
if he says it too, you accept it because he's been there and done it. So same as Alex Ferguson.
Yeah, yeah.
Nobody says you're good enough. You think fair enough. Okay, I mustn't be good enough.
Did he sugarcoat it in any way? Did he give you a pat on the back?
He just said you'll come back to haunt me one day, and I obviously went back to Old Trafford twice and won.
Yes.
The team. So yeah. So what can you say about the guy? He's a legend.
Yeah. Yeah, Chelsea Arsenal's the other big game of the weekend. Wenger says that Robin van Persie's the best striker in the world. Is he the best striker in the world?
No, but without Robin van Persie, Arsenal would struggle massively. You know, if they lost, I would go as far as say if Arsenal lost Robin van Persie, it'd be a mid-table team. He is like Thierry Henry was for him. Do you know what I mean? He is that important to him. You know, he's a fantastic player. And Arsenal, the world, you've got to look at somebody like, you know, David Villa, you know, even Rooney. You know, Pelé said Rooney would get in his team. So, you know, I think Robin van Persie is a world-class player, and he's that important to Arsenal. For Arsenal, he probably is the best player in the world. Do you know what I mean? For Arsenal team.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I wouldn't say he's the best player in the world.
They've got to keep him, haven't they?
Got to keep him, yeah. But, again, you know, if you're Robin van Persie, do you stay at Arsenal, or do you move on to bigger and better things?
Well, that's right. Yeah, I mean, it's
if you're the best player in the world, you know, if your manager thinks you're the best player in the world, you know, why would you be playing for Arsenal? Let's be honest.
Yeah.
It's at this moment in time, Arsenal are a wonderful football club who have had great history, but now, realistically, with Man City, United, and Chelsea, Arsenal aren't going to win a title for the next 5-10 years. They could, but I don't think they will. So if your manager thinks you're the best player in the world, best out of four in the world, you know, you're thinking, I want to win stuff, yeah? Am I going to win anything with Arsenal in the near future?
No, probably not. And he's, you know, he's, how old is he, 27?
Yeah.
He's probably got three.
He is a world-class player, no question.
Yeah. I mean, how much is he worth, Van Persie? 40?
Well, if Andy Carroll, if you look at people who are worth now, Jordan Henderson, 19, 20, Carroll, 50, 35, it's not their fault, them players go that much. You know, watch Tevez. Tevez was worth 35, 40. You know, if you know, you've got to say 40 million, easy. Yeah, easy 40 million.
So if you're Wenger then, or if you're the Arsenal board, do you, and if they said to him, you've got 40 million, should he sell him if he had the 40 million to spend?
I wouldn't sell him, no, because if I was a manager, no, because he's that important to that team. 40 million for Arsenal Football Club. You know, what are they going to do? But he is that important to that team.
Yeah, signed 40 French midfielders who were all 5'3", probably. Yeah, so they've got to keep him and try and buy again in January, yeah?
Yeah, and then keep him. And I say to him, we're going to buy world-class players. But can they attract world-class players?
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah.
If you're a world-class player, do you go to United, City, Chelsea or Arsenal?
Yes, well.
Or Liverpool, I think you choose Liverpool, I think. Or Tottenham, I think you choose them five before Arsenal these days.
Yeah.
I think Arsenal, you probably, if you're a world-class player, you choose the five teams before Arsenal in the Premier League, which is a sad indictment of how they've gone, as you know, on the field.
Yeah, yeah. So they might struggle to keep him.
Then. Arsenal fans will think I'm talking absolute nonsense, but yeah, the reality is, you know, that's my opinion, and I believe if you're a world-class player, you choose City, Chelsea, Liverpool, you know, Tottenham, United before Arsenal these days.
What was he like to play against Van Persie? What's he so good at?
He's got a bit about him. Yeah, he was niggly. You know, I don't think he liked me that much. I'm being honest, and I didn't really like him because, you know, he's one of them type of players. You just want to go into a 50-50 with him, really. If I'm being honest, because I couldn't get near him for, you know, ball wise. You know, so I was always waiting for the opportunity to go into a 50-50 with him because I know how to come out on top.
Yeah. He is quite hard though, isn't he? I mean, I know he's injury prone, but
yeah, he is. Yeah, he takes an off, to be fair.
Yeah. So when you're up against him, what's he doing? Just giving you a little sly dig, or
yeah. You know, I don't think he liked me as a player because I was obviously, you know, a different type of player to him. You know, when you're one of the best players in the world, and you know you're technically far better than me, you know. I don't think you like somebody who's going to go in and smash you in a tackle, and that's what I try to do every time I've played against him.
Yeah,
I don't think he liked it.
Did he, with a bit of chat on the pitch, or?
Yeah, loads of chat. Yeah, listen, he give it out, mate. He gives it out.
What kind of things would he say to you?
I don't know, maybe I don't speak Dutch.
Oh right, it was just Dutch swear words, was it? Right, tell me what are you dancing on Saturday?
So we're dancing to Michael Jackson's I'm Bad. You know, it's a very difficult routine this week. It's a pass a doble, and the ending is, you know, the ending is going to be absolutely. But if I pull the ending off, mate, it could be the ending of all endings. Strictly, it could be the end of me, or it could be the best ending ever. So it's going to go either way.
Brilliant. Well, we'll look out for that on Saturday night. Don't forget to vote for the Robbie Savage, and Robbie Savage. We'll see you next week. Joining us now on the Mirror Football Podcast, a little treat for you. You know him as a striker for Aston Villa, for England. What you don't know is that Darren Bent is even more deadly when he's playing video games. How the hell are you, Darren?
Yeah, not too bad at all.
Very good. Now, first things first, we all know that there's a lot of gaming that goes on in the England camp. Who's absolutely useless at it? Who do you want to play all the time?
To be fair, funny enough, I've never really played anyone that's useless, to be fair. It's quite a high standard, but if you talk about the best, then like Rooney or Jeremy Lescott, but as far as being the worst, I have to probably play myself.
You mentioned Rooney there. Do you think you'll be playing, games with him at Euro 2012?
I'd like to hope so. Obviously there's a long way to go between now and then, and hopefully if I can keep playing well and doing well for England and Aston Villa, then I'll be there.
Yeah, and Wayne, I mean, he's got to go, surely, hasn't he?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, even if he does miss two games or three games, you know, I mean, he's so influential to the team that just having him around the camp is a big boost in itself.
Yeah, absolutely. So when you're with the England team, you're either in the Grove or away. Where do these gaming battles take place? Are you in a lounge together? Are you in somebody, you know, will Rio say come in my room, or will you play over the net in your own rooms?
Yeah, sometimes. I mean, we play over the net sometimes to each other's rooms, but a lot of the time we just, you know, I mean, bombard someone's room and just go and play against them. Like last trip, like Wazza and, you know, Ashley Cole and Andy Carroll in my room playing doubles on FIFA. So it just depends whoever's got the game in their room really tends to get bombarded.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you mentioned FIFA there, which is another great EA game. Is FIFA a big part, playing FIFA a big part of your life? It's a bit like a busman's holiday, isn't it? You come home from playing football, then you start playing football again.
Yeah, it is massive. I mean, I don't know a single person that doesn't play FIFA. It is a massive game, and to be fair to EA, it seems to get better every time they make the game, to be honest. So it's so positive for everyone to play. I mean, the demand for the game is massive. I mean, there's people I know that are still trying to get hold of the game now because it's sold out everywhere.
Yeah. And when you play, are you always Villa or England? Do you want to be Darren Bent, or do you want to be somebody else?
To be fair, I mean, obviously, when you first get the game, the first thing you'll always do is probably go and check out your own stats and what you like on the game. But to be fair, a lot of players always have Chelsea, Madrid, Barcelona, Bayern Munich, Manchester United. They're the same teams that always seem to come out. So you always find that you're playing against the same teams, to be honest.
Yeah. And are you taking on your teammates, or will you just go online and take anybody on?
I tend to take on a lot. I mean, no one at Aston Villa really plays FIFA, to be honest, but I tend to play with a lot of the older guys from Sunderland and Spurs and stuff like that. And if they're not available, then I play against my own friends. Or, as I said, last case scenario, I just play against some random online.
Yeah. What's your, I mean, Battlefield, you're going to be, Battlefield 3, you're going to be wearing a headset while you're playing that. What's your level of trash talking like? Would you give somebody a snidey nod if you just wiped them out?
Yeah, to be fair, I mean, when I'm playing at home, obviously I can't really repeat what I really say when I'm at home, like, but when I'm playing, you know, I'm against some, as you said, tomorrow when I'm playing the game, yeah, I'm sure I'll be a bit more reserved, but it is always good fun when you've got someone sitting next to you or you're playing against someone to give them a bit of trash talk to try and put them off.
Now, I mean, people who don't know what we're talking about, Battlefield 3 is a first-person shooter, right? It's got big multiplayer element. You're basically running around destroying stuff. So what's your tactic, Darren? I mean, you're a goal poacher. Are you hanging about and sneaking in when other people are ready to make a kill? Are you sniping from distance? Or are you piling in?
When I played it before in the past, I've been one of them guys, to be fair, that because it's a computer game, you think to yourself, well, there's no point. I mean, a lot of my friends that annoy me because they're like, they will hide and they'll be like sniper, and it's not really a lot of fun, but I'm one of them guys that has to get out there. I mean, I know I rack up a lot of deaths on there, but I also get a lot of kills because, you know, I go out there looking to kill people. But it really frustrates me when people just like hide and sniper from miles away and you know where they are. It's just boring.
Yeah, so you're just piling in, are you? Driving the tank right in the middle of it?
Yeah, taking a tank and just going straight in there and trying to get as many kills as possible.
I mean, the thought of meeting Alex McLeish on the field of combat's pretty scary, even if it's a digital field of combat. Have you ever met a manager who's like computer games or understood any of this stuff?
No, not to be honest. I mean, I've never really spoke to Alex McLeish about computer games. I mean, I know Peter Grant is number two.
Yeah.
He's got kids he was speaking about, you know, trying to get hold of FIFA early, and he asked if I could get a copy. But as far as actual managers go, like, I've never really spoke to any manager about any computer game full stop, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it is like digital paintball in a way, isn't it, Battlefield? And, you must have been on a few paintball trips in your time. Is it good for team bonding, playing these games together?
Yeah, it is as well. I mean, not only team bonding, it's like I've got a lot of friends that, obviously I live in Birmingham, and a lot of friends that live in London and, you know, in Newcastle and places like that, and it's just a nice way to keep in touch with them and play games with them and just like hang out with them as such, if you get what I mean.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you get to chat with your old friend. I hope it's within 30 miles of Birmingham, by the way. That's important right nowadays, obviously. What's the weirdest? I mean, what have you done in terms of team bonding during your career? Have you done the old rope bridges and paintball and all that kind of stuff?
Yeah, I've done the old paintballing. I remember when I was at Ipswich Town and like the younger age of the youth team, we used to go to like army camps and do team bonding there, like running around with like, you know, stretchers with bags of sand on it and logs and stuff like that to do team bonding.
Oof.
But recently, like, the only thing I can remember doing really is like clay pigeon shooting. I did that before as well. That was when I was at Charlton, and that was quite good fun.
Yeah, that sounds like very good fun. Yeah, that does sound like good fun. Video games, are they the new paintball? Could you all get together and have a Aston Villa day? And if you did, who would be the best?
I don't know when it comes to gaming, really, because no one at Villa really plays the computer or talks about it. If I'd probably have to say myself because I'm probably the only one, but. As I said, I think the good thing about obviously gaming and the multiplayer and stuff is that you can sit in your own front room and play against, you know, thousands of people online, and you're in the comfort of your own home. So, you know, I mean, that's all you need really to make it any good.
Okay. Two-parter then. If you're on a real battlefield, which are your teammates? All the teammates you've had, past and present, domestic, international. Who would you want alongside you? Who are the sort of the blokes who you really look to in the trenches when things have been going bad?
I'd have to say probably, if I had to say three people, I'd probably say Lee Catamore one.
Yeah.
Probably George Santos when I was at Ipswich.
Right, yeah.
And probably Ben Thatcher when I was at Charlton.
Blimey, well, yeah. I mean, Lee Catamore, very hard done to player, do you think? In terms of reputation?
I mean, he's one of them guys, to be fair, that you need in your team, to be honest. I mean, I know he picks up a lot of bookings and sometimes, you know, I mean, gets sent off and stuff, but at the same time, he'll run through brick walls, he'll put tackles in, and he's not scared to tackle the big players as well, so he's kind of one of them players you need in the team.
Mm. And from the other perspective, I mean, three people or four people on a team who you would not like to play against, who you'd not like to face in the trenches, who are the hardest people that you've ever played against, the toughest guys?
Probably Vidic is one.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's absolutely solid. He's an animal.
Yeah, he does look like it as well.
He's strong. probably Andy Todd.
Yes.
When he was at Charlton and stuff. And I probably have to say someone else like... I don't know, I'm trying to think someone who's... I mean, I never played against like someone like Rory King, but I can imagine that he is solid.
Nails, yeah. I think. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Finally, let's just talk about Villa and sort of the prospects there going towards the tournament for you. How do you sum it up so far? It's been a good start. It's not been a brilliant start for you personally in terms of goals, though, yeah?
Yeah, I'd say so, yeah. I mean, it's obviously been stop-start as well with the injuries and stuff.
Yep.
Which has made it a bit more difficult, but obviously I'm over the injuries now, and hopefully start banging them in, and we can have a good season.
Yeah, because it was very... You had a very... It was a strange season last season, wasn't it? You had the stuff that happened with the manager at the end of the season, with the manager's health, then obviously a fresh start. How is Alex McLeish different to Gerard Houllier?
I just think they've got different tactics. I mean, obviously Gerard brought me to the football club, and I've gotten really, really well with him. And he was very much more a tactician, I'd say. Gerard Houllier really, really thought about the game, and Alex McLeish really is a lot more hands-on. Really, he's one of them guys. He wants to be solid and obviously not get beat. He wants to obviously start off with a point, and then if you can get all three, then it's a bonus, really. So he's definitely made us a lot more solid as a football club.
What do you have to do to get those Villa Park fans singing his name? Because obviously he's come in there from Birmingham. There's a little bit of history, but you have had a good start to the season, apart from Man City, you know.
Yeah, I mean, all we can keep doing is picking up good results. Really, I mean, any manager, obviously when he goes into a new job, is under pressure. It's the same for Alex McLeish, to be fair. So as long as we can keep picking up good results. And trying every week and showing the fans that we are trying to work on and improve as a football club, then that's only going to help the manager.
Excellent. Well, good luck for the rest of the season. Good luck in the Euros when we finally get there. Just finally, what's your favourite weapon in Battlefield 3?
I probably have to say the AK, probably.
The AK.
AK, yeah, probably that's my favourite gun.
Well, even Vidic might be stopped by that. Darren Bent, thank you very much, my friend.
No problem, thank you very much.
Thanks to Darren Bent there. And now, here's somebody you'll know from his time as a singer in The Farm and as a TV and radio pundit on All Matters Liverpool. What you might not know is that before that, he came on the radar as the man behind The End, a really influential and very, very good fanzine that took in football, music, fashion, poetry about soup, and talk about the greatness of the Jack Russell Terrier. Now, all 20 issues of The End have been compiled into a lovely new book. Peter Hooton, how the devil are you?
I'm okay, thanks, yeah. Very good introduction.
Thank you, sir. Thank you.
I'm going to live up to that.
Well, I know. Now, let's start with the burning question. Could The Farm have taken the soup dragons out on the cobbles? Could you have beaten them up?
Soup dragons?
The soup dragons.
I've never heard of them, have they?
Was it not? They were sort of the... What was their song? I'm Free, was it?
I'm Free. Oh, sorry, yeah.
I'm Free, yeah.
I don't know much about them, but we had a notorious reputation, but it was all reputation.
Yes, yeah.
It was no. It's like every band. There's no real lunatics in band except for that Robbins fella and various members of the Stranglers, I believe.
Yes, I think.
Oh, yeah, and... what's his name from Dexy's Midnight Runners?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
He used to tie up journalists.
That's right, yes, yeah. Jean-Jacques Burnel from The Stranglers, he was a bit tasty, wasn't he?
Yeah, I've heard that, yeah.
Yeah,
Madness
absolutely.
Madness were pretty tasty as well.
Madness,
I
think so, back in the day,
No, most groups are big pussy cats, aren't they?
Yes.
Including Liam Gallagher.
Oh,
but he hasn't got his minders with him.
Yes, that's very, very, very true. Let's go back to Liverpool. It's 1981 then. God, it's such a long time ago, isn't it?
Yeah, God, it's 30 years.
Yeah, how did that happen? So,
where did that go?
I know. What was it? What was it like in the city at that time? And what were the elements of that you wanted to talk about when you created the idea of The End?
Well, there was a rebellious spirit in Liverpool during that period. And what we're going to do at The End is hopefully reclaim the 80s, because Liverpool now has got this sanitised image of a tourist city, and they keep on condemning the 80s, but I'm pretty proud of the 80s, because we were teenagers growing up, and we actually we thought we could take on the Thatcher government. we nearly did, you know, but there's certainly, it was a lot more politicised as such, you know, and out of that came a lot of creativity, a lot of groups emerged in the 80s and a lot of fanzines and a lot of interesting stuff, you know, like various plays on the television, like Boys from the Black stuff,
yep,
you know.
Yep.
So it wasn't this, sort of like desert of creativity, like it's being portrayed by a lot of pundits, you know.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's very similar to Manchester in many ways, wasn't it, at that time?
Yeah, it was. Yeah, I mean, you know, I'd say in terms of music, a very, very creative period, and out of mass unemployment and hardship, that's what you tend to get anyway, you know.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I mean, it was kind of the dawn of the football fanzine then. Were there any football fanzines at that time?
No, I mean, that's the one thing. I mean, I was inspired by this, anarchist fanzine, which I picked up in Probe Records, which was the alternative record shop in Liverpool. And it was during the Charles and Diana wedding, and it was, it was really caustic, you know, really scathing attack on the royal family. But I thought, there's only going to be about six anarchists read this, you know.
Mm.
A few punks, but I thought, wouldn't it be great if we could have a fanzine which reflected music and football in the city, but was had a wider appeal? So that was really the inspiration for it. Because I took this fanzine home, read it, and I just couldn't stop laughing, you know, because it was just an adulterated attack on the royal family. But it was funny as well. It wasn't just, you know, an attack for the attack's sake. It was talking about, you know, post riots. You know, it's great to have a royal wedding now during the rioting season. You know, it was just brilliant. You know, so. That's what I intended to do, to have that type of humour, but have more of a mass appeal, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
The intention.
But you definitely, I mean, you did, it wasn't about football, was it? I mean, when I bought it quite late on in the piece, I was stunned by how little football was in it.
Yeah, it wasn't really football orientated. It was, you know, it was music and politics and just about everyday people that, you know, you come across. I suppose, you know, for want of a better description, for example, say John Bishop does his John Bishop's Britain on the television. That's observational humour. It's not jokes as such, and everybody knows exaggerators. Everyone knows boasters. Everyone knows people of that ilk. And it was just a mishmash of our mates and friends that we knew who were quite funny, you know, and you know, unintentionally so sometimes, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it was a really, really funny fanzine. When I think about it, it's kind of like the Sex Pistols at the Free Trade Hall, you know. Obviously, it wasn't selling a million copies,
no.
But everyone you talk to about it now,
yeah,
all says, "Oh, I read every copy and all of this kind of stuff."
Well, we've got a lot to live up to, and people actually make it wait there. It's not that good. But I mean, the stock characters we had, you know, it's become common language now. People's favourites, things like Billy Ball, was just someone you knew at the pub. And it's still the pub bore.
Yes, you know, he was like the boring guy, wasn't he? Yeah, yeah.
You know, and just exaggerated all the time and boasted about things he couldn't have possibly done, you know. And then there was the No Mates character, you know, and everyone knows people like this. They had the Knobhead Tours, which was the coach driver who, you know, wouldn't do anything that you'd ask him to do, you know. And it was just generally, still things happen now which people can relate to, I think, you know, and that was the idea of it. You know, the only thing that's died out is probably the hot dog man. we particularly liked the hot dog men because, you know, they used to walk around with the little carts and give everyone food poisoning. You know, we used to be amazed that anyone would actually buy them, but of course people only buy them when they were intoxicated. But now you've got a lot more selection. I mean, people go to Indian restaurants or Chinese now, you know, because even though it was 30 years, it's like a different...
It's a different planet. Yeah, I must admit, when I first saw Phoenix Knights and the guy who used to hang around in the club and used to say, you know, he'd been caravanning and he stayed in the next caravan to Robert De Niro because Robert De Niro loves Pufelli and all of it. And I know where they've got that idea from.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it was all that type of humour, yeah, yeah.
It was, and you used to do the ins and outs, which is probably the first time I've ever seen that in a magazine. What kind of things were in and out? They were like different dogs?
Anything that was fashionable immediately went into the out column.
Yeah.
You know, and anything that was unfashionable was in the in column, you know, and sometimes people went in the ins and outs, you know, during the same edition, and, you know, but the idea behind that was just, it was just a piss take, really, on fashion magazines, and really of what people saying what's going to be, what the new colour was for next season, yeah. You know, and the ridiculousness of that, you know, but people took it a bit too seriously, because then... a lot of newspapers and magazines started having their own ins and outs, but with, you know, not tongue-in-cheek at all. You know, they were being deadly serious, which even fueled our ins and outs even more, you know.
Mm. I mean, John Peel was famously in your corner from quite early on. I think it was probably him talking about it on the radio when I first heard
so,
at the end.
Yeah.
Did you become a mate of his?
Yeah, we became a mate, but I mean, we didn't know him before the end, but what we used to do is we used to send him copies of it, you know, with really scathing letters about his show. You know, but, you know, everyone treated John in reverential terms, didn't they? But ours was the complete opposite approach. We thought, you know, he might like this magazine, but we've got to get him to read it first because he must be inundated, you know. So we sent these caustic letters to him, you know, and saying, you know, you might think you're covering the underground scene in Liverpool, but Exmal Deutschland and Children of the Bong don't really relate to the unemployed in Liverpool, you know. And what he said about those letters is that in a documentary, he actually admitted it. I never knew this, but he said, you know, he thought to himself, the cheeky buggers, who are these people? To, you know, I'm John Peel, this DJ. And then he thought to himself, well, it's exactly the type of thing I would have written to older DJs when he was, you know, a youngster. So he met us in Liverpool. We got a very, very honest interview with him about his time in Dallas when he was famously at Lee Harvey Oswald's assassination. And he is on, you can get it on the internet, he is actually there, it's him. he pretended that he was from the Liverpool Echo, you see, because he was working as a DJ over there, you know. So we've become good friends, yeah, and kept in touch with him all the time until his untimely death. But one thing, I mean, he said about the magazine is, you know, he said it cannot be equaled and it cannot be surpassed, which, you know, coming from John Peel is like, you know, it's unbelievable. That.
I hope that's on the cover.
It's not, actually.
Oh, he's missed a trick there, you and James.
Well, no, we've got... he says, oh, my favourite magazine is The End, which mixes music, football and beer.
Yes, well...
So that's another quote on The End. We thought the other one was a bit too grandiose, maybe, you know.
I mean, was anyone... Who else was in your corner then? I mean, was there any set, obviously, the musicians...
Paul Dunoyer was... But every group, we always doorstep groups. You see, I went to a lot of concerts and then quickly realised that if you actually get to the groups at the sound check when there's no security about, they'll actually give you an interview because they want to get rid of you. So, you know, we got lots of interviews, the likes of The Undertones and UB40, The Beat, The Clash, you know. So we got lots of interviews and we never went through press agents or anything like that. We just used to turn up to the sound check and burst our way into the sound check, you know.
Just...
And usually people thought, if you're at the sound check, you've something to do with the group.
Yeah.
I mean, I spent a week in Paris with The Clash, and everyone thought I was with Pete Wiley, because he was on the bill with them. It was Pete Wiley, The Beat, and The Clash for 7 nights in the Mogador Theatre in Paris, you know.
Oh, that's not a bad lineup, is it?
Not bad at all, but in the end, you know, I mean, I remember famously, and this is always the philosophy the farm had, when The Clash first came in the very first night, I was in the dressing room helping myself to their food and drink. And they came in and I said, oh, I was sorry about that, do you want me to leave? And Mick Jones and Joe Summers went, no man, we're The Clash, you do what you like. And I just thought, that is a brilliant philosophy. A lot of other groups would have had you there beaten up and thrown out.
Was there any sense that any, I mean, did any Liverpool players, Everton players, it was so far away from their kind of comfort zone.
Yeah, it was so far away from that. I don't know if you ever read the, but we were aiming at people who were went to football matches, but mainly the ones who went to away matches, you know.
Yes.
And it was really, that's where the fashion angle came from. But, you know, we didn't take fashion that seriously. We were commentators on it, really. You know, and it was so quick changing. But because of its national appeal through John Peel and the likes of Paul Denoyer and Billy Mann and the Sounds as well, people started writing in, you know, saying, why are you skitting Yorkshiremen? And that's what James Brown always says, that, you know, he can remember the articles. There was articles about the fashion-crazy Yorkshiremen, you know.
That's right.
You know, and they were like, that was just basically people from Leeds and York saying, we're not scruffs, we dress in this, and then they'd list a load of things that they were wearing, you know, and it just became ridiculous, but it was funny, you know.
It was, and I do remember that piece, and it was kind of about the propensity to wear the star jumpers still, wasn't it, and all
that was one called The Disappearing World of the Wool.
That's
which was the fact that when Liverpool and Everton were travelling to Leeds, they realised that Leeds fans were getting quite smart, you know, and it was supposed to be that casual period, you know, the rise of that.
Yeah.
And you know, the article was written, The Disappearing World of the War, because you know, people expected sheepskin coats and three star jumpers, you know, and that.
That's right. Yeah.
Like Birmingham bags that you know, that tended to be worn in the mid-70s to late-70s, you know, but, yeah, it was all very tongue-in-cheek, you know, but the idea is that we wanted to make people laugh, you know, and that was our motivation, really. And I think a few publishers sniffed around us, you know, but I think they would have changed the spirit of the magazine, you know.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but it seemed to be quite erratically published, wasn't it? It seemed to get more erratic towards the end.
Definitely, yeah. I mean, I think the 87 and 88, there was only one each year, you know, whereas the first few years, you know, there's three or four, and there was a natural enthusiasm there, and you couldn't wait to pick it up from the printers and you know, sell it at the match and at concerts and see people, you know, huddled around it laughing, because that's what used to happen, you know, believe it or not. It was like, because everyone now is on Facebook and Twitter, and that's where all the humour's coming from.
Yeah.
Whereas in those days, it was the mysterious world of the printer, wasn't it, you know?
It was,
Unless you did it yourself in a DIY fanzine, there was no platform for people's opinions. Now, I suppose Twitter and Facebook are those forums now, you know.
Yeah, that's right. That is very true. And you actually couldn't do a version. You couldn't do a magazine like The End now, a fanzine like The End.
No, I don't think so. Because it's all on websites. Because I mean, obviously James has Sabotage Times and. There's also Louder Than War by John Rowe.
All the
good writing is on websites like that now, you know. That's what I tend to find, because people want instantaneous stuff, don't they, you know?
Yeah. So did you just run out of enthusiasm for it, or was it because the band The Farm was becoming more and more of a priority for you?
I think because the band were becoming more of a priority, and also that, as I say, the natural enthusiasm had gone. And there was also there was a magazine called Merseysound.
Right.
Which had got to 20 issues, and I just thought, you know, you've got to end on an even number, haven't you? You know, 20 issues sounds about right.
Yeah.
The Farm were getting, you know, we were getting busier, and just didn't seem to have the time, you know, to dedicate to it as much as I had before, you know.
Yeah. I mean, the Farm, obviously, your best known song is a football song of a sort, isn't it?
Yeah.
When did you get the idea of writing about the Altogether Now, which is about the it's about the Christmas truce, isn't it? In 1914.
Yeah. I got the inspiration for that when Michael Foot was at the Cenotaph, believe it or not, and he had that so-called
donkey jacket, yeah.
Which the you know, since he's died and since the Queen Mother's died, it's come. It's been revealed that she actually complimented him on his lovely coat. But I remember the Daily Mail and the Express at the time saying it was a disgrace, it was a dishonour to the troops who died in the First World War. I thought, well, no, actually the opposite has probably been true. They'd probably be thinking, you know, you're actually, representing us, you know.
Mm, yeah.
And so then I just started reading more and more. I knew about the Christmas truce, but I come across a magazine which had an article about it, and then I researched it, you know, and realised how widespread it was, you know.
It was, yeah, it was not just one football match, was it? It was right across the line, yeah.
Several football matches. And also, you know, the fact that it went on for quite a long time on hundreds of miles of the Western Front, you know.
Yes, that's right.
And the reason I wanted to write about it is because it was something which, you know, it's fairly well known now. But at the time when I wrote about it, it was just, you know, the mid-80s. It wasn't really that well known. There's been a couple of films about it in the last decade or so, but it wasn't really that well known, you know. Mm. I thought, you know, this is what people should learn about, you know.
Yes, yes. And of course, Paul McCartney had written a song about it earlier on.
I didn't.
You never connected the dots, did you?
Yeah, I didn't. You know, I thought that was just an extension of one of his frog songs when it was called Pipes of Peace,
that's right, yeah.
You know, I mean, looking back at that, when you see the video now, yeah, it was very similar, you know, in terms of... But I didn't realise at the time, you know, because, you know, you only see that video in retrospect. I never saw that video during that period, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Are you proudest of that song or the band, or are you proudest of the end?
One of my favourite farm songs. I never really get to hear them because we messed it up, really, because we were an independent company and we released the wrong format. But it was Love See No Colour.
Yeah, yeah, I remember that one.
I mean, you still get it on YouTube. We did the video in New York, and the day before, we were with Joe Strummer in his hotel room with Mick Jones. We were supporting Big Audio Dynamite over there.
Right.
So we had Suggs, Mick Jones, Joe Strummer, all in the same hotel room, all agreeing to reform the Clash.
With Suggs.
And Joe Strummer said, "You're doing a video tomorrow." And he said, "Yeah." And he said, "Yeah, here's a pair of Ray-Bans. You've got to have Ray-Bans on a video." So he gave me his Ray-Bans, which I kept, you know, and looked after them for years and years. Got them broken once. Took them to an optician's to get them fixed, you know, to get the glasses put back in, you know. And they said, "What are you fixing these for?" I said, "Because the Ray-Bans, you know, they're worth a lot of money." He went, "No, they're not, they're fakes."
Very good. I mean, let's wrap it up by talking about Liverpool then. You're a natural optimist anyway. Are you still optimistic?
Yeah, I'm a natural optimist when it comes to the football club. I think when it comes to other things, I'm a natural pessimist, you know. But yeah, I'm still hopeful. I mean, I think these owners, obviously, anything was better than the last owners. The last owners were an absolute disgrace and nearly took the club under. You know, we were, you know, hours away from administration, yep, which would have mean starting again with a new name, probably. I don't know, you know. But we certainly would have been, you know, deducted points and probably would have gone into the championship, you know. And yeah, so I'm optimistic. Kenny Dalglish, you know, he's a legend, so, you know, no one's going to really turn against him. He's going to be given time. But obviously, we all know football's all about, what you know, money now, isn't it? And what you can spend. And Liverpool aren't in that top tier of what they can spend in terms of... you've just got to look at what Man City have done, you know. Mm. And their net spend has been, you know, hundreds of millions. Liverpool have spent big on some players, but it's a squad game, isn't it? And, you know, famously, Man City have got... and Chelsea and United have all got the second string is nearly as good as the first string, you know. Liverpool haven't quite got that, you know.
No.
So if we do get into the top four, I think it'll be an achievement, you know. But I'm quietly confident.
Quietly confident. If you're the manager, does Andy Carroll start for you? Is he?
Well, I think you know. I always remember. I always quote this, that there was a brilliant book called Secret Diary of a Liverpool Scout.
Jeff Twentyman,
who was bought all the great players for the Shankly and Paisley period, you know, and he bought Ian Rush. And Ian Rush was a big signer from Chester at the time, you know, not in the Andy Carroll, you know, bracket in terms of, you know, 35 million, but he was still a big signing, you know. We broke the transfer record, I think, at the time, you know. And he didn't settle his first year. He was absolutely awful. And one of the directors came up to Jeff Twentyman and said, what are you going to say now? This was after his first year. He said, "You bought a dud there, Jeff." you know.
Yeah, well.
So that, you know, I always remind people of that, you know. It's all about settling in and getting, you know, and there was sparks last night against Stoke where he seemed to have a good understanding, you know.
Yes, yes.
With Suarez. But, you know, it's all about bedding in and, you know, getting used to things. I mean, it's not, you know, you're not going to get an instantaneous relationship, you know, with, you know, Toshak and Keegan didn't click straight away. It took months and months, you know.
Mm.
But people now in Sky Sports and the Premiership, everyone wants instantaneous brilliance, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not going to happen. It's even took City. I mean, how long have they been spending? They've been spending for 2.5 years, haven't they?
And it's taken them this.
And it's taken them that to get to this point, you know.
He has been. I mean, he's been disappointing in his off-field activities, Andy Carroll. I expected him to be the full Balotelli by now, but he's actually been pretty quiet, hasn't he?
Yeah, he has. I think he's probably, you know, he's keeping his head down, isn't he? You know.
I think so. Yeah.
And,
I think
he lives in. I believe he doesn't live far from me around here, you know. But I haven't seen him out, which is a good thing, isn't it?
It is.
There's one thing Liverpool, and that's one thing was in the end. Was Rumour Man was, you know, alive and
that's
kicking
right,
in the 80s,
rumor.
You know, there's so many rumours about footballers in the 80s, you know, getting mixed up with gangsters and being threatened, and when people were injured and they said, oh no, they're that injured, being beaten up by that gangster crew, you know.
Yes, that's right.
There's all sorts of fantastic rumours, you know.
Fantastic rumours.
Put around by Rumour Man.
Rumour Man, certain Liverpool goalkeeping legend who allegedly had to leave Liverpool for...
That's right.
Yes,
yeah.
I think we know who we're talking about.
There's all sorts, you know, and, you know, that's what, you know, it's the rich tapestry, isn't it? That's what people thrive on, don't they?
It is.
You know, I heard in the summer off various good sources, Steven Gerrard will never kick a ball again.
Yep.
You know, it's just great when, you know, these people are proved wrong, you know.
Well, it's a terrific book. It's really good. It's great to see it all again, and I wish you all the best with it, every success. And we'll speak to you again. That's all from the Mirror Football Podcast with me, Steve Anglesey. Back next week with Robbie Savage. See you then.
The Daily Mirror calls on you.
Football is about nothing unless it's about something. And what it is about...
I am going to get 100% out of you.
Oh, well, of course, you're busy, definitely.